Yeah, no pressure, yeah. Okay, so southern resident killer whales are one of the global population of killer whales that we have in the Salish Sea. They consist of three pods. JK and off pod, the basic social structure is the mantra line. So there's no natal dispersal for males or females from their matrilineal groups from birth. They're strictly fish eaters. Work by Brad Hansen and colleagues has shown that they strongly prefer Chinook salmon. And they rely on sound for a variety of really important biological functions, including echolocation, where they actively send out pulses or clicks to sense prey in the water. So they use that for foraging. They also produce pulse calls and whistles for acoustic communication. That helps them maintain cohesion and coordinate movement among their group. They're listed as endangered in both the U.S. and Canada, and a large portion of the Salish Sea is designated as critical habitat on both sides of the border. That's shown here, the U.S. side critical habitat and the Canadian critical habitat are shown there. And I know that we wanted to list reasons for why we think that there's decline in the population or status trends for the southern resident killer whales. It's actually been fairly identified in their recovery plan what the risk factors are. The threats to this population includes prey scarcity, both quantity and quality of the Chinook that they prefer. High levels of contaminants and water pollution is another risk factor. Vessels and noise disturbance and cumulative effects. For the work that we're doing, we're focusing on a couple of these risk factors together, the prey factor and the vessel and noise disturbance, and then the effects of those two possibly working in combination. Vessel traffic in critical habitat is very common from a variety of different sources. There are a lot of whale watching vessels, both commercial and recreational, that are focused on viewing the whales, so they tend to stay where these killer whales are during the summer months. And then passenger ferries, shipping of goods, fishing vessels, and other commercial and recreational vessels are very common. Here's an example of some vessel traffic that was plotted from AIS data over a course of a year, and this is by different types of vessels going through Admiralty Inlet, and you can see all the vessels going through. So that's just one example of vessel traffic in critical habitat. What do we know about vessel effects and sound? That's one of the risk factors, and a large part of the work that I'm presenting today is focused on that risk factor. There's several studies that have looked at both vessel effects and sound. One thing to put into context is that, as I said before, they rely on sound for a lot of different reasons, but acoustic signals are especially important during foraging. Not just the echolocation that the clicks that they produce for echolocation from foraging, but also the calls that they produce seem to be most often heard when they're foraging, and that's been reported by a number of studies. We know that noise levels in critical habitat increase as vessel counts increase. So this is a plot of the number of vessels on the horizontal axis and background noise levels on the y-axis. And there's a very positive and significant relationship there, but there's also a lot of variation. Southern resident killer whales respond vocally to vessel noise. They increase their call duration and their call amplitude, showing that the effects of auditory masking are a challenge for them. And some of the behavioral responses to vessels are quite concerning. There's a variety of different responses that have been documented in the presence of vessels or as vessel counts increase. One of them is decreased foraging, and so that's particularly concerning given the risk factor of prey scarcity. And I want to point out that this study, we didn't have any noise levels that were measured concurrently, or the colleagues didn't measure noise levels in that study, and so that's something that we want to address in our objectives. I'll go over on the next slide. But given what we know about vessel effects and sound, there's some mechanisms that have been put into place to protect killer whales against this risk factor. The main being the NOAA federal rule that was passed a couple of years ago and went into effect in April of 2011. And basically, it forbids approach closer than 200 yards to killer whales. Prior to that, there was a Washington state law that was a 100-yard minimum approach. So the NOAA Fed rule doubled that approach distance, the minimum approach distance, in both positioning the tassel whales. So given the previous studies, all the different components or pieces of the puzzle that we have about vessel disturbance and sound and killer whales, our study was to try to put some of these pieces together and one study collect all the data to address that risk factor. One is to quantify noise that individual killer whales experience. And so previous studies have measured noise levels in the environment, but not where the actual killer whale was. So this is what we call received noise levels. They're constantly moving, diving in a three-dimensional environment. So we want to really see how they receive noise, particularly anthropogenic noise, through critical habitat. Another is to determine the relationship between vessels and their attributes and received noise levels. That previous plot about vessel counts and noise levels was just looking at one factor of vessel presence. And so, as I mentioned before, there's a lot of variability in noise levels that aren't explained by just looking at vessel counts. And so we're interested in looking at the characteristics of vessels that might predict noise levels in critical habitat. The other is investigating detailed killer whale acoustic and movement behavior during different activities. And when I talk about activities, I'm talking about behavioral activities, states, traveling, foraging, etc. Some of these activities, like particularly foraging, can be subtle. A lot of it happens subsurface. Previous studies have been able to observe foraging, but only at the surface, and we're missing a lot of cues that happen while the whale is diving and finding food. The last goal is to determine potential effects of vessels and associated noise on behavior, especially foraging. So understanding the first three bullet points here will allow us to address that last one. So the way that we're addressing these goals, our ambitious goals, is by using a couple of pieces of technology. One is a digital acoustic recording tag. So this is a tag that is temporarily attached to killer whales via suction cups, and they can be programmed to release at a given time. They have two hydrophones on them to obtain an acoustic record of both the noise that the whale is experiencing, so background noise, and then also the vocal behavior of the whale, how they're using sound for different activity states, such as foraging. They also have movement sensors in them, accelerometer, magnetometers, pressure and temperature sensors that allow us to reconstruct movement when we get the tag back and we can download the data. So the tag is deployed manually with a pole, and then once we have a whale that has a D-tag on it, then we conduct vocal follows and collect a variety of different data on the research vessel. So all of our data has been collected in on waters around the San Juan Island, both on the U.S. and Canada side. We have permits to do that. All of our data is collected during daylight hours, and we have three field seasons of data so far. We're planning to collect more data in September of this year. One of those field seasons occurred prior to when the federal vessel regulations went into effect, so we have some before and after data to look at. The whale and vessel data, the details of which are largely realized by equipment that was developed by Deborah Giles and colleagues. So this is an integrated equipment package that's similar to like roadside survey package, but modified to collect data on the water. And basically it has like a GPS, a laser rangefinder, a compass, and a data collector that allows us to take really detailed notes about both data about the whale and its group and about vessels. The type of data that we collect includes behavioral activity states that are congruent with previous studies. So we can look at how that would be scored on the surface and then compare that to the data that we get from the tag. We also collect pre-sampled opportunistically to validate what we think is foraging behavior when we can. And then all the vessel data within a kilometer of the tag whale is collected and includes information about the location and therefore the distance from the whale, the type, class, ID, speed, orientation, and a number of other variables that we can look at to relate to noise levels. So far, We've had 23 tanks deployed over our three field seasons. The average duration of the deployment is about 3.5 hours, but there is a wide range, 45 minutes to 7.5 hours. Some of them release early because of surface active behaviors or what have you. But so far we've had data that come back from members of all three pods and across different sex and age classes. So we think it's pretty representative of the current population. And so this is an example of a bird's eye view of the vessel data that we get from what was collected on our research vessel. And essentially, I'm going to play a quick video to show you, because it's hard to really see the dynamic nature of it. But I want to just explain that the thick white line is the whale track, so the track of the whale that has a D-tag on it, and then all the individual vessels are shown by white dots. And then if they're connected between lines, and that's the same vessel through time, and I'll just explain a little bit more as I play it. I know you opened it, but I'm looking for the... Okay. So here, I'm just going to fast forward a little bit more so that we're a little further along. Okay. So basically, you can see, and this was about a little under seven hour. The text did offer a little under 7 hours. And you can see at some points there's just a few vessels on the scene, and then at some points there's a lot of vessels on the scene. So in addition to just knowing where the vessels are relative to the whale, we're collecting, again, data about the type of vessel, and then hopefully going back and finding information about the vessel, about size. We collect data about how fast the vessel is going, and then a number of different things that we can relate to noise levels. So that gives you an idea of... how we can recreate what's going on while we're doing while we're collecting data on the water. So far, we've addressed. We have data that's been analyzed to address a couple of our research goals. One is measuring noise levels received by killer whales for the noise that they experience. One limitation is that there's a lot of flow noise that goes over a tag when a whale, especially if they're swimming fast, that can contaminate the acoustic record. So we have to pick times where there's not a lot of flow noise. So using our criteria, as well as no whale sounds, that can also cover up ambient noise levels. We have over 2,700 noise levels that have been measured, but these aren't temporally independent because of that flow noise issue. And then the minimum level has been 88 decibels, and this is over a frequency range that's relevant to low frequency noise of vessels and the communication calls that they produce, as well as the range of best hearing sensitivity of killer whales. And so this minimum level was associated with only three vessels on the scene. Two were going stationary, and one was going very slow, and that was actually a research vessel. The maximum was 141 dB so far. That was associated with a large, fast vessel. This is a time series of what the noise level data looks like. This is just a portion of a tag deployment that was in 2010. Basically, you can see there's a lot of variation. The individual data points are where we could measure noise that was absent of flow noise and whale sounds. And there's gaps, obviously, where we can't report noise levels. But you can see that there's this big peak at 141 dB, and that's actually a ferry passing less than 300 meters from the whale when we had the tag on it. Juliana Houghton is a master's candidate at UW, and she's working out the vessel data to relate to noise levels. And so far, her model is predicting that speed, size, and distance are all important variables for predicting noise levels. We have a number of different cues that we can get from the tag itself, and I'm running out of time, so I'll have to just go through this quickly. This is just a dive profile of two foraging dives. We know that they're foraging dives because we collected three samples at the end of each dive, and we can look at vocal behavior during the dives. These are calls, these are clicks, and so we see there's a lot of vocal behavior in this subadult male, not so much in this adult male, but there was some buzzes, so we can relate those cues to foraging. We also now we can also look at things like pitch and roll. During these foraging dives, these are the same foraging dives, what we see is a lot of variation in roll, in particular, on this ascending phase of the dive, so we can look at three-dimensional representations of foraging. And so we only have a handful of pre-samples that we've actually collected, and so what we want to do is try to look at the validated foraging dives and then understand the cues that are associated with them to say what's foraging in our tag record. So to summarize, obviously foraging behavior is one of the most concerning effects of vessel disturbance in killer whales. What we found is noise levels are variable, and that they are predictive of vessel size, speed, and distance. Stay tuned for the results as we collect more data. This the tag data allows us to observe subsurface behavior that would otherwise be missed. So it's a powerful tool. And so we hope that this study, by applying new technology and novel ways of collecting data, that it can address these multiple risk factors and provide details to address information gaps to inform recovery efforts.
So we'll hold questions for now. And we're happy to have in the birds and mammal section a fish talk, so don't be confused that you're in the wrong place, because we know that we want to have linkages. And we're happy to have Dane.